Well, 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 hello everyone. Once again, welcome back to the What the Sheep podcast, where Alana and myself will be discussing breaking down and generally freaking out over the impending solstice as we discuss Critical Role Campaign 3, episode 48. We are almost at that 50 mark. We are almost there. Holy moly.
It's coming.
Rapidly approaching. Like, I still don't even feel like we're that far, like, into the campaign. Like, when I think about, like, episode, like, that's, we're very far. We're almost, what, 2 years, 2.5 years into this campaign?
Oh, don't say that.
Like, a year and a half? I think we're approaching, maybe not 2.5 years. I think we're approaching 2 years.
It was, like, November, maybe? Or October of 2021? Is that right?
I think so. Time is getting a little stranger. But before we dive into all this stuff, the stream on my end is being a little weird. My internet might be going in and out, so I apologize if there's some buffering or interruptions. If there is, never fear. The VOD upload on YouTube will be perfect. And so if you miss anything, do not worry. But that's just a heads up that the folks here watching live might get a little funky. So bear with us. We're going to be going ahead and talking a little bit also about last week's episode, since we didn't have enough time, or we weren't live last week. So we'll be touching on it a bit, but mostly talking about.
We actually had the podcast. We just didn't stream it.
It was just for us.
Just by ourselves in our own places.
Yep.
Just talking to a wall.
Yep. So we'll be going over that, and then obviously diving into last night's episode, and then briefly talking about episode 789 of Vox Machina, because I am not fully caught up yet, but at least we can talk a little bit about some of the early Kevdak stuff and journeying into the Feywild and all that. So it's actually, what a coincidence that, you know, they're in the Feywild in the campaign and then also in the Feywild in you know, in the show.
Yeah,
it's just it's perfect. I wonder if the writers planned that. I wonder if they knew ahead of time.
Refamiliarize themselves with the with the area, the heading.
I think that's probably what it was.
Those clever writers.
It was. Those sneaky little guys.
But more Feywild stuff in episode 47. Yeah. So kind of the finding this Malleus key that they're like, okay, well, we need to destroy this.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like, and I know some people don't like it, but it felt like a solid 2 hours of planning, and I really like that. I like it when it's above table talking about what can we do, what spells have you got prepared today, how many, like, you know, sorcery points do we have left, what can we actually do? Because I really enjoy that aspect of D&D, and it's why, like, you know, a 10-minute session, a 10-minute time period in a D&D game could take 6 hours. So I like that when they're actually allowed the time, because I feel like sometimes they've gotten into that situation and Matt might put down a ticking clock, or he might be like, you know, someone's coming, you got to move. But I think he really let them just sit and plan this, this, you know, destruction, this infiltration of the Malleus key. And it went pretty well. Like, they did a pretty good job of scouting it out, assessing their options, and just fucking blowing it up. It was really
just
cool.
Totally destroying this thing. And going off of your planning thing, it is definitely needed, especially in such like an important part of the story. Like, this is a Malleus key. This is something that Ludinus and the Unsealed Court have been working towards to, you know, siphon power into the Exandrian Malleus key to break the seal.
Yes.
So it definitely warrants, you know, 2 hours of planning to try to get this right, because, you know, they don't want to screw this up and, you know, drop the ball and get themselves captured, killed, or, you know, otherwise. So
And
definitely good that it worked out.
Definitely felt like there was a lot of opportunity for that to the, I can't remember their names, and I won't remember their names, so I'm not going to try, but the creatures that were guarding the Malleus key, like these fox-like creatures
the Aramads.
Aramads, that's it, yeah. I was thinking Amans. I'm like, that's all right. Aramads, they were cool. Cool design, and kind of, they never really did eventuate to having an encounter with them, but there was just that constant threat of, you know, one shifting over there, or one is walking on the parapet, it's looking down. A nice amount of threat in this espionage kind of encounter, which is good. I it's it spoke to me as a D&D player. I really enjoyed this encounter.
And I am surprised. I'm not surprised of, you know, the threat that was here, but I'm also surprised there wasn't more. Just like I'm surprised there wasn't an overwhelming presence of just guards, traps, just a whole manner of stuff to keep this thing protected. Which could also mean a few different things. Maybe the Unsealed Court isn't, they're obviously invested in it somewhat, but it might not be like a huge thing for them, like it is for like Ludinus, where it's like, yeah, okay, well, we'll keep an eye on it, but you know, it's not our biggest concern right now. Although the Sorrow Lord and Gloamgut didn't seem too happy about the destruction of it.
I think a little bit of it too might be like a hubris sort of thing, because we know that Otahan was there. She does have an invested interest in this working. It is needed for whatever the hell they're doing. So I think it was a little bit of like, it's in the Unsealed Court, it's protected. No one's getting here. If someone's coming here, they're fools, essentially. But they didn't really account, I think, on Exandrian group coming with the backing of Nanamori to support them, and with such intent and knowledge of its existence. So I think for a large part, it might have been, it could have been, you know, hubris of it can't be destroyed, or maybe just misinformation of maybe they're going to focus on the one in Exandria. Like, how are they going to get to the Feywild? How are they going to, you know,
that's true,
deal with all this kind of terrible stuff between here and there? So, I think it was just like, it's important, let's protect it, but it's pretty safe. It's okay, it's fine. Like, you know, nothing's going to come for this.
That's a very good point, because in the Feywild, I mean, it's really just the Sealy Court that they would have to worry about. But since they're so deep in their own territory, they're like, why would they even come out here? That actually makes a lot of sense now.
But it went boom, and they messed up those plans. It's interesting. I'm wondering how much it's going to kind of like affect the overall effectiveness of the main one. Which is exciting, because it's, you know, it's a little win. It's a win that they get to take with them if it does kind of affect the main one. Although it does also seem to have made the defenses around the main one a lot more.
But now,
a lot more intense.
Now I'm concerned.
Ooh,
so
good feeling.
So as far as we know, that we gained from like last night's episode, is that it seems like the Malleus keys in the Shadowfell and the Fey realm are more so just siphoning extra energy and power into the one in Exandria.
Yeah.
It sounds like it will still work if those are destroyed. It just might not be as effective, or might be unstable. Yeah. Now, if it is unstable, what if they only like partially crack the seal, and then things like on Rudis become unstable, where just part of the Priothos is able to come through, and that has different ramifications and stuff. So it's like almost scarier if it only half works and like the seal half breaks, because then it's like, oh shit, like what now? Like what does that mean if it's only like partially coming through? Well, then like the essence of Priothos or whatever focus on Exandria rather than the gods, since it's not strong enough to consume the gods.
Yeah,
like,
that's cool.
Oh god,
that is cool. Yeah, my fear was like, what if they destroy the one in Exandria, but the one in Shadowfell is still active, and it somehow manages to draw the attention and draw the power of Ruidus, and Ruidus then infects Shadowfell. Because we haven't really had a proper Shadowfell adventure. We had a little bit in campaign one, but we've done mainly Feywild stuff. But if you think of the Apogee Solstice as like the blending of the planes and the convergence of these planes, the siphoning of power and just, you know, wibbly fuckery that's going to be happening, it is concerning if it doesn't work, or if it only half works. It's like, you know, going into a teleporter with a fly and coming out a monster. It's that's a cool thought. I really like that theory. I really liked back to episode 47, because I don't want to get away from it, but Gloamgut, that winged beast, was so cool. Like, I loved the design of it. And I love the sound it made when Matt's describing the beam of energy. It's like breathing out. He made that really cool like energy noise, which I'm not gonna try and recreate. Yeah. But it was cool. It was like, yeah. It was I liked it a lot. I thought it was a disintegration breath to begin with. Because Matt just described it as, you know, like solid black energy, like hitting them. I was like, that's awful.
That could have spelled the end of Fern, as she did go unconscious.
Yeah,
the end there. Yeah.
Yep. Sorry about my drink bottle.
That's rough.
Yeah. No, I really like that creature. I thought it was cool. And yeah, the escape from it was fun too. Like it's been a while since I've had like a stealth run through the forest. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good Feywild adventure. And what was the I know you wrote it down because you were telling me before, but the monster, Cyclops at the gate.
Yes, Tarrosh, the littlest Tarrosh. Slumber.
Ooh, yeah. Gross. Even the name's gross.
I know, littlest, the freaking eye that never blinks. But what a fun little puzzle for them at the end of all of this. Good.
Finding Laura Bailey's like weakness, her one weakness, like rhyming, improv rhyming. that was wonderful. Beautiful.
I think Marisha's is probably my favorite, just because it was, I think, the most clever for me. The Vespin Chloris journal and stuff.
Yes, that was very cool.
Was good. But all of them so good, and Ashley panicking being the last one.
Yeah, and then consistently not rhyming midway through.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you gotta rhyme. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yep.
But that was a really fun little encounter, because it could have been this terrifying, you know, battle towards the end. And it might have been. You get the sense that it was growing every time they didn't rhyme.
Yeah.
And becoming more irate and more prone to attack. So I kind of wanted to see that too. But I did enjoy that it was just like, yeah, no, cool. You paid the price, in you go, sort of thing.
Yeah. But also, like, two things about that encounter. Like, letting them in one by one as they were, like, appeasing the Cyclops made it even more scary and intense. Because it's like, oh, we are losing party members because they're succeeding. Now, if things go bad, there's only, like, three of us here now.
That's what I thought, because it was Ashton went first, then Aurum. Yeah. So, like, they're two main, like, melee class. Yeah. Like, and then Chetney goes, you're like, oh, god damn, this is bad.
Yep. That's not good.
Yeah, no. I thought that, too. That was... Mm-hmm. But it was fun. It was cute. I liked the Gloamgut threat consistently behind them. Oh, and we didn't even talk about being chased by Gloamgut
and
Nanamori for assistance. Uh-huh. That was badass.
Cool. The Archfey Kaiju battle, essentially.
Freaking, let them fight.
that was cool. Just like the imagery of that battle happening was super badass. And then it Gloamgut approaching faster and faster as they're trying to get these rhymes out, which makes it even harder to rhyme, because then you're panicking about the dragon coming back to kill you.
Yeah,
and it's all tough, but
I was real worried with Fern's rhyme, because she said something along the lines of, you know, a better prize would be me. Is this creature going to take this as an invitation to keep Fern? this doesn't bode well. Mm-hmm. But no, it was quickly received.
They were good. They were all right. But again, like, massive props to all the players for coming up with a rhyme on the spot. But then even bigger props to Matt for able to then come up with a rhyme for each of them based on what they chose. I wonder if he maybe had like an idea of some rhymes for each character to begin with.
I think because he was doing like odd rhymes, so it was a phrase, then the rhyming end. I'm an English teacher, I should know how to explain this. There was a phrase, then there was the rhyme, another phrase, and then the rhyming couplet sort of thing. A couplet. I think he would have had those prepared. And then he was able to kind of like customize them as he saw fit. But it was still really, really fun, and he made it so naturally. Like, if I was doing that, I'd have my DM screen going like, that was very fun.
Yeah, right.
And you know, you should run.
Yep.
Like, he literally was just so off the cuff and like, well done. yeah, no, it was really nice.
Mm-hmm. And interesting, because I think this might be the first, I don't know if in the campaigns if they had any weird rhyming stuff with the Sphinxes or any weird intellectual puzzles like that. This might be one of the first ones that we've had.
I like it. It's great. It's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. More.
Give us more of that. Every episode, give us a rhyming puzzle. just to give Laura practice, you know, since
exactly.
Like she's falling a bit behind there. But no, the party once again returns to Exandria, the land of Exandria in Marquette.
Mm. On time too, thankfully.
On time, yes, as it seems like no time has passed. Although Matt did have them roll a lot of D20s.
Yeah. What?
Whatever the heck that was.
What?
I don't know.
Am I remembering incorrectly, but the Feywild, can you age coming out of the Feywild? Is that a thing? Because that's what I thought was happening, but then it didn't happen. I know there's the time dilation. Maybe that's all he was rolling for. Maybe there was some kind of aspect of time dilation. I don't know. Maybe. It seemed really sus.
I don't know. I think maybe he was rolling for Rin and the possibilities of Rin getting captured, maybe? Although I feel like that would be more something he just does behind the screen rather than rolling.
Felice is suggesting Mori took something from Orym and Mordna.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Maybe.
I don't know. It's cool though, and I want to know what it was. Yep. I hope either it's revealed in game or if not, it's eventually, and it's probably going to be nothing. It'll probably be like it'll probably be like a silly little thing of like rolling to see what time of day it was.
Yeah. Like that. Right.
I
don't know. Oh man. Maybe they're rolling for Caleb and Beauregard in the Shadowfell.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what happened.
Oh wow. That would be cool. Crazy.
That would be wild, if that was actually what was happening. I like that theory,
I do
guys.
Like that theory.
Ooh.
But why?
Can you imagine if Matt's just back there with Caleb and Bo's character sheets?
Yeah.
And like getting them to roll them like, that's a 15. Like,
I mean, I could see that. I mean, I do still think that. We'll shout out Cyberspace Samurai for coming up with that theory. Because I do still think that Caleb and Bo are the most likely, or like that makes sense to make an appearance in this campaign. So them in the Shadowfell one, I guess, would make some kind of sense if the Grim Verity goes to like the Cobalt Soul looking for expositors to help out, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah.
Logan's like, if that's the case, they rolled poorly.
Oh yeah, they died. Yep, Caleb and Bo died in the Shadowfell. And we're gonna hear about it. That's their cameo. It's gonna be like their funeral.
I'm not kidding. That might be one of my favorite theories that anyone has ever brought up on this podcast.
That's Caleb and Bo
right now. It's amazing.
That is
good.
That is really good. It's exciting to think about. Now I wanna know. Now they need to just go to the Shadowfell. They need to just go there.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're underleveled. Just go farm some boars in a forest and level up. That's all you got to do. But then we did have a couple of conversations specifically about Orym or with Orym and FCG. Kind of a similar conversation that FCG has had with a few other people. Basically, FCG just not really knowing what to do with themselves and. Now relying on their god for guidance, specifically relying on the coin of the Changebringer to make all of these decisions, which, as we were kind of saying before we went live, is kind of a downwards trend for the character, kind of a step backwards a bit.
It's not really character growth, it's character recession a little bit. Because we're saying it's a little bit like this idea that as much as FCG has often said that they, want to know what they are. Are they alive? Do they have a soul? This is kind of taking all the accountability out from their choices. If you're saying like, well, I didn't make this choice. The coin made this choice.
You're
giving up accountability for your actions. And it's that's not a healthy thing to do.
No, it's not.
So it's interesting to see FCG kind of go down this path, and I think it is very much just a path of trying to find meaning and trying to find purpose, which is this kind of recurring theme for FCG and a lot of the party. And it's actually really wonderful that they had that chat with Aurum about, you know, what is your purpose? Do you still have a purpose? And Aurum's like, well, I have a purpose for now, and it gives me a place in the world for now, but you know, these things change. And a little bit of Legend of Vox Machina, I think it's like episode 10, I'm not going to go too far, but it's a kind of nice comparison to Scalen and Vax. They have a lovely conversation in campaign, but it comes up in the show of, you know, what's our purpose? Like, how do we do this? How do we face this thing? And it's just always kind of nice to see Liam and Sam have a role play moment together.
Yeah.
Because they are, you know, obviously close friends. So it's just a nice pairing of actors, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice.
So, yeah, I really enjoy where FCG is going with the Changebringer stuff, because it is crunchy and it is kind of concerning to an extent. And I just want them to be happy. I just want them to find purpose or not find purpose and just be happy in existing.
Yeah, just be content with, just vibing.
But it's, you know, they're a completely different life form to anything else, so it's hard to know what that is or what that means for them.
Yeah.
But it's interesting and it's fun to watch. So keep flipping the coin, FCG, I say.
I know. Like, I'm into the chaos of that.
Yes.
And I think it will take like a bad outcome in order for FCG to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. Like, yes, it leads them into danger or get someone injured or killed or, you know, whatever. That would be enough to be like, okay, I actually do need to be making the decisions and not this thing.
It's a little reminiscent of Knot as well in campaign 2 of, you know, the like her reliance on alcohol as well was kind of like started to become a much bigger problem around this point too, around like episode 50 when they got to Felduin, heading to Jorhas, got a lot worse. It's a present arc of Sam's characters of, you know, comedic relief.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Issue.
Turning into very drama heavy, angsty.
Yeah, which stuff, I love. It's so good.
Yeah.
Give us the drama. Give us that devastating moment that's going to cause wonderful change.
I wonder if we'll have a similar moment in because in campaign 2 we had the funny moment where Knot's flask went missing because Jester swiped it. And there's that whole like bit and scene and stuff. I wonder if someone might try to swipe the coin.
Yeah.
CG like Fern or Ashton or something. Just like you're relying too much on it.
Maybe Ashton. I don't see anyone else but Ashton already doing it because with the Bells, Hells, and we've talked about this before about how they are as a party. They kind of feel like a party of adults.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Mighty Nine were, you know, they're all grown up and adults, but they were very much like, you know, sometimes a little bit selfish, sometimes a lot broken. Yeah. Whereas Vox Machina then was like a family, so they kind of had that cohesion.
Oh, right, yeah.
So yeah, Bell's Hells is very much like, they're a grown, consenting adult. They can make their own choices. Mm-hmm. But I could see Ashton being like, no, screw that, FCG. You're fucking this up. This is real bad. Like, we need to have an intervention.
Like, enough having faith in this coin and this god. Have faith in yourself, FCG. Have faith in yourself. Yeah.
I don't think that'd be enough for FCG. I don't think FCG's... FCG needs an answer. Needs a definitive binary answer. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they do or don't get that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the Apogee Solstice could be a critical point in a lot of characters' stories. You know, obviously, the biggest one would be, you know, Imogen, like her mom and stuff, since they're directly connected. But what could it mean? What could this Apogee Solstice mean for the gods? Like, could the Changebringer like directly reach out to FCG and be like, yo, we definitely need to get this stopped.
Oh no.
You have my blessing and my power. Yeah. So please put a stop to this madman. But there's a whole lot of stuff, and the Apogee Solstice is not waiting for everyone. It is rapidly approaching.
11 days.
11 days.
11 days.
11 days. Yep.
It's the length of a spurt's life.
So just think from here until the Apogee Solstice, that's that is how long Spurt lived.
Poor Spurt.
We'll see if they could have lived a fulfilling life in that time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Spurt was very happy. Spurt had a lot of material possessions.
Yeah. Oh yes. Oh yes. And unfortunately, all went with him in his death. But speaking of death, or maybe not death, we had a reveal that Rin has been captured.
I was like, where are we
going? Roller coaster of emotions in that buildup. Yes, Rin has been stonified or petrified, locked in place.
Not ideal.
No, not great. Especially when, Rin was like their powerful magical user ally that could bamf them around. Yeah, they don't have their taxi anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or their main point of contact within the Grim Verity. So, it's not good. But not to cut you off, this could strengthen our theory that Bo and Caleb are in the Shadowfell and Matt doesn't want them to cross paths yet. So now they like the Bell's Hells can't enter the Shadowfell because their plane riders isn't there. So
yeah.
It only
like
strengthens that theory.
Mm-hmm.
Does.
Yes, it's a some kind of plot device.
Yes.
That's horrifying about Rin. One, they need Rin for help and stuff. But also being petrified is such a tricky position to be in because there's always that teetering edge of destruction being petrified. Which is, very, very concerning. I think obviously from just a narrative standpoint, petrified makes the most sense. From a real world perspective, I'm like, you're an idiot, Odahan. Just destroy Rin. Like, what are you doing? This, you're just begging for them to be restored and fuck your shit up.
Which makes me think it's for a reason.
Well, I think Matt said in the description, it's like, you're not sure if it is almost like a warning or like a goading kind of thing, which makes sense. I understand it from that point of view of being like, hey, got your friend, come get them.
Yeah.
But from a tactical, logistical point of view, if I was Odahan, I'd be like, this wizard's too dangerous to keep around. But again, it could play into that hubris aspect of like, we got this, like we're good. We got the wizard. Mm-hmm. We don't need to worry about this. But at the same time, happy Rin is still alive-ish.
Yeah. And it's for the hubris, especially with, Odahan Thule. Odahan Thule basically, 1v9 to them the last time they were there. And this Malleus Key is heavily guarded, and she will also probably be there. So she's probably like, we'll just have Rin here as a warning, and that's that. That's all she wrote here. Bell Cells are going to do it.
How are they going to do it? Let's be real here. How are they actually going to go up, destroy this machine and Thule at the same time?
They're probably going to have to use Imogen. Using her mom to get access or to get in. And then hopefully Imogen can channel her Super Saiyan mode and go crazy. Like she did back in Basaras when she had her whole Jean Grey moment. I think that's what's going to be needed.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, probably Lyanna's going to have to come to the side in this moment, because it does feel like even though they have leveled up a bit and they've gained new abilities and things like that, they're still not quite at the level to take on Thule, especially during the Apogee Solstice. We can only probably assume that Thule will gain, more strength from this process. Mm-hmm. And Ludinus, if he's fucking about, that's endgame. It's like, we can't, maybe he's busy in the Shadowfell
being taken out by Bo. Well, that would make even more sense now why Caleb and Bo would go to the Shadowfell. Because if they're tracking Ludinus and he went to the Shadowfell, because we only know that Odahan is at the Exandria Malleus Key.
Mm-hmm.
So where the heck would Ludinus be? Maybe double it, because they already know that the Fey Realm Key was destroyed because they were, strengthening the power of the Exandria One from kind of what we gauged from that vision. So I guess it would kind of make sense if Ludinus is then going to the Shadowfell One just to keep an eye on things.
Yep, I'm on board. I'm fully on board with this theory.
Yes.
Yeah.
But one other thing that I did like and would be an interesting mechanic is, you know, the dream vision that Imogen was having, so that she could see Rin in that state and see the Malleus key, is what if they were able to, like, teleport that way, where, you know, she's, like, kind of astral projecting herself to view these places. What if she was then able to just manifest herself there, since it is still also kind of a dream? Because they had thought maybe Odahan was doing that, but then we realized she was just reading from, like, a scroll, probably just a teleportation scroll. But it would be kind of interesting if they tried to do something like that. It'd probably only work on her, but
getting some,
really,
like,
cool mechanic.
I don't know if you've seen the movie The Prestige.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting some, like, creepy prestige vibes of, like, if you manifest yourself in another place, you're creating a duplicate.
A duplicate, yeah.
And it's like, ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But that would be a cool ability to be able to, you know, project yourself and then move your body there as well.
Yeah.
Could work.
That'd be cool. Could work. I would be down for it. But now I'm just thinking about The Prestige. That movie fucked me up. My goodness.
Yeah, that's such a good movie.
That was good. We'll talk about The Prestige on our Prestige podcast.
No, this is now Prestige podcast. This is now.
We dive into all of our theories about that movie.
Dive feet first.
Yep. No, but it was nice having this vision. Obviously, Odahan dealt some pretty serious psychic damage to our Chetnian FCG as a punishment for the spying and all that stuff. It was a lot of damage. It was not good. Not great.
I was worried it was going to trigger FCG.
I
thought that's what she was going for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a bit of like, all right, well, your punishment is you know.
You attack your
off you go.
Your friends.
Yeah.
Yep. Go have fun with all of that. But that's not only the only thing we had fun with. We also had fun with messaging Keyleth again. However, the fun ends rapidly as it seems like there's something going on in Terra, which is where the rift to the elemental plane of Earth is.
Yes.
And they were saying, Keyleth was saying that there's some stuff going on. It's a bit unstable and it might be connected with the Apogee Solstice coming up, perhaps.
Yeah.
So
there is some badness happening around there.
Yeah. And I guess there's not really much to theorize there. Is there an Earth dragon that we don't know about that was locked away? Kind of, you know, Thordak being locked away in the fire. Earth elemental.
We know for a fact that the king of the elementals, or maybe it was the queen, was an Earth entity.
Wasn't one of those ones that were destroyed in Calamity?
Yeah. They were shot up into the sky, weren't they?
Shot up into the sky, but what if they were just shot off into
the
Earth plane? into the Earth plane. And this is them trying to get back into the realm. I don't know. I don't know what it could be.
It's cool, but it's also kind of like, it could also just be a plot device to keep Keyleth out of there. She's like, sorry, I'm busy.
True,
like,
yeah.
There's some real shit happening here.
Or it could be Matt setting up more stuff for later in the game, once they finish all this stuff.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. What are you thinking for, like, late game sort of stuff? Because I have seen a few people mention that they feel like this is coming to the end. Like, the campaign is, like, not so much like rolling down, that's not a phrase, but you know what I mean. But it's like, this will be the end once they deal with whatever this Malleus key is. And I can kind of see that as well. I can kind of see this being, you know, they destroy it, they take out Odahan, Ruidus is locked away securely, and they're like, well, great, we've done it.
Yeah.
What now? Like, we've all actually kind of, you know, really achieved some big parts of our character. Lordness has seemingly gotten rid of Delilah. Chetney has gained control over his form. Imogen will be kind of free from Ruidus. I would imagine if this happened, they've all kind of, maybe apart from FCG and Ashton, have achieved their goals and achieved what they're set out to do. So what it could be a nice spot to end the campaign if they are successful. Yeah, or if they're unsuccessful and it's a TPK, campaign's over anyway, let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that being an argument of, you know, the campaign could end fairly soon with the destruction of this thing, with the completion of this arc. However, I could also see it going on for another 50 episodes if they want it.
Yep, like, depending on
there is a lot more to do.
Loose ends.
Yeah.
Because I do think that this is a very, we've talked about it before, it's a very climactic arc since it involves like the world and two planes. Like it involves a lot. And even this would all, like, the conclusion of this arc would also conclude Orym's main directive during this campaign.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. And again, yeah, like, it would really just be Ashen and, like, kind of Fern that have some loose end stuff to deal with. But I could see, and again, we're talking about how this could be the final arc of the campaign, and it could be a bit of a shorter campaign. But we could still be, you know, like 15 episodes away from the ultimate climax.
Yeah, definitely. We said before how 10 minutes can be 6 hours. They've got 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to do in these days.
Yeah.
I think you're right. A couple, at least 10 episodes before we get to it.
Because what we'd probably
who knows?
Have...
It could be next episode.
It could. They could just TPK and it's all over, you know, right there. But I do think with the stuff going on in the elemental plane, that could be setting up some more late game stuff. Or whatever consequences come out of either the completion of the Malleus Keys and the breaking of Verdus, or the partial breaking, or even just stopping all of Ludens' plans in his tracks. Like, the consequences of that could also bridge to later stuff, you know, down the line. But I do think we will not see a greater threat than Predathos, save maybe like Thera's Dune, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
So if Predathos is stopped or is sealed, remains sealed, I don't think there's much of a greater threat or more of a more climactic threat than that. So I think if this is like the climactic arc, I could see them following, you know, smaller threads for the rest of the campaign until every character's story is satisfied and all that stuff. But yeah, once like Ludinus, Odahan, and Predathos are secured away and dealt with, I don't really know what else.
Just those
there
three.
Is.
Just those three we need to deal with. That's
yeah,
biggie.
Just get rid of them and we're good. Everything's fine and dandy. For this campaign at least. Obviously there could be other threads in other continents, you know, that things could, you know, go down, but I don't know. I don't know what the plan is here. It all depends on the consequences.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on what happens in the next 10 to 50 episodes for this 11 days.
Yeah. 11 days could be 30 episodes in itself. It all depends
we need to go back and do the math of, you know, it's 11 days to Travelocon and how many episodes that was.
It actually was. Felt like forever. Especially since we had the shutdown in between, you know, them and all that. So we actually had to wait like a year.
I forget that this happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And then it comes crashing back to me. It's like, oh,
I know,
yeah,
just
that's
a flood of memories coming back.
It feels like it was fictional almost.
It does.
Let's not talk about it.
Yeah, that'll go us take us down a dark tunnel that we will never get out of. But regardless of all that stuff, the party eventually arrives in Imogen's hometown, her old stomping grounds once again.
What's it called,
Nico? Jigelvin.
Jigelvin.
That's it's something there.
Givlin.
The Givlin. That's Imogen's hometown. That's where they arrived at. I was kind of surprised at the reaction at Imogen's return. I didn't realize that she was a big deal. I guess.
Yeah, I think I missed that too. I know that it was, I knew the story of Lordna came to town and she was shunned, mm-hmm. and Imogen stood up for her and then they went together. I think I missed the part where Imogen's like, oh yeah, no, I kind of exploded. I kind of might've done some damage. Yeah, so that's interesting to kind of you understand where the fear of returning home comes from then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but no, it's kind of nice. It sounds like a nice place, old Gullivan.
Gullivan.
And it was interesting to meet another NPC dad.
I know. We've been getting a lot of them. We've been getting a lot.
Yeah, lots of dads.
Yeah, but this one actually... in a tier list of dads that we've met in this campaign,
he's not the worst.
He's not the worst. He's not.
I kind of get the set, and I don't know his name. I can't remember his name. Daddy.
Relvin. Relvin or something.
Relvin from Gelvin.
Yep. I think it was Revlin. I can't remember. It was something
Revlin
like
from Gevlin.
Yep.
I kind of get the sense he was, very, very conflicted himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like a terrible dad, but you kind of, from his understanding of it, it feels like, you know, Lyanna, they had this relationship together and she had this hidden part of herself that he didn't know about because it was hidden. And he maybe feels like a bit of, animosity towards her because of that, or he feels like, you know, a bit of betrayal because of that, and that then somehow, you know, not somehow, but that then affected his relationship with his daughter. So he does kind of have a very sad, I guess, backstory, somewhat sympathetic, and it was kind of nice to see that they were able to mend it a little bit. There was like some recognition of, you know, well, we're still family and, you know, I never want to hurt you, and, you know, potential for healing in that relationship. So I think as far as things go, he came across as quite cold initially and distant, but this is a dad that can grow. This is a dad that can, like, you know, come around. There's been some dads that cannot grow in Critical Role. Uh-huh. So this is a massive improvement.
Yeah. No. And going off of like the originally very like cold and standoffish when they first encountered, again, we don't know exactly how everything played out when Imogen had left. Like it could have been like a horrifying, like terrifying display that happened, where it would, her dad is having a justifiable reaction where it's like, I don't know if you're going to blow up like that again, where, you know, things were getting dire. So We know Imogen and we love Imogen, and so when we see her dad being like cold and stuff, we're like, this fucking asshole, like, why is he treating
Jesus Christ?
Why is he treating Imogen like this? But we don't know the terrifying side of Imogen. Kind of. Yeah. We know the display she had in Basaras. Maybe that's what happened in Jivlilin, in this town. It would have been interesting if when they were approaching, Matt is like describing the town. He's like, and then off to the side, you see just like destroyed stuff. But also, it's been like a few years, so they would have rebuilt anyways. But maybe there's some.
But you know, it was nice. It's always nice going to a character's hometown. Yeah. Although, is it always nice? I'm trying to think.
Is it? Yeah. Wait a minute.
Not hometown. Devastating.
That was great.
Devastating.
Not good. Who's?
Oh no, Jester going back to Nicodranas. Wonderful.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, see, that was great.
You know.
We're reunions of family and hometowns and stuff. They're good. It's, well, 50-50. 50-50
at this point. Yeah, don't mention anyone. Tell Tarion. Don't mention Tarion. Oh no. Oh, you're weighing the scales against it.
We didn't speak fast.
We need another
enough.
Positive one, guys. Let's go. Yep. But yeah, no, it's
Caduceus. No,
they met him in his hometown.
They met him in his hometown.
And then he technically went home to his family, they were all petrified.
They're all petrified, and then a bunch of them died. Then they're brought back. So he was happy. That one evens out to happy. I think that one evens out to happy.
End result, happy.
We'll take that one.
We'll take it.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it was from a narrative entertainment point of view, it's nice seeing people go to their hometowns. Yes.
It gives them a chance to grow, like, as characters, and it allows us to see a different side of them, because Imogen, we haven't seen the way she acts with family, and so it was just a different side of Imogen that we hadn't seen yet, you know, where she's trying to, you know, fix things with her family and see how she acts in her hometown. We also did get a nice reunion with Laura, the horse.
Which is a brand of margarine here in Australia, so it makes me laugh. I just picture, like, it's a spreadable butter, Laura. But I also recognize that's a normal name for a horse and flowers and shit. But yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, no, it's great. But again, yeah. Speaking on, like, it is nice to see characters go to their hometowns. It again just allows us to see maybe a slightly different side of them. And this allowed Imogen to have a cool character moment where she, you know, uses fly / levitates, you know, get onto the sky ship when it arrived.
I love Captain Zandus.
I know.
They're wonderful.
They are so good. Probably my favorite NPC next to Rin for this campaign.
Yeah, they're really good. Just just sassy. I love it.
Where are they going from here? Are they going to Yeos? Was that the plan? Well, where were they heading?
I thought they were heading in the direction of the Malleus Key.
Maybe they are. For some reason, I can't remember where they were going. That's literally like the last thing of the episode where they're like, and we're off.
I think because we've not got a map yet, like a full map of Marquette, it's quite tricky. I can't place places.
Yeah,
in my
head. I don't know where they are right now.
But yeah, Hellcatch Valley. So that's where it is. Is that right?
But isn't the Hellcatch Valley like a very large part of Marquette?
I thought Hellcatch Valley was where Drusar was, or is that where? Oh my god, this is bad. This is not an informative podcast.
Yeah, wait.
This is an opinion podcast.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I feel like at one point we might have been informative.
We lost Adam. Adam isn't here.
Oh no. I would think they would want to head back and check in with Bertie and the other one, Faye's parents.
Yes.
Faye's parents? Fern's
Faye?
Parents.
Wait a minute.
They're Faye. Okay, Hellcatch is where Bassarus is. Yeah, and the Malleus Key is somewhere north of Bassarus, I think.
Wait, no, it's so, north of Yeos, I think.
But Bassarus is north.
But Bassarus is also north. True.
Yeah. That is true. So you kind of got, okay, so this is Marquette.
Yep.
You're like Drusar.
Yep, Drusar is over there. Yep,
Bassarus. Yeos, some stuff.
I think that's about it. Ankarel is somewhere.
Ankarel's over like here. Yeah.
Totally.
I'm also mirrored on my screen.
Yep. So it's actually. So just look at that, but then just reverse it in your mind, and there.
They should
that's
print
the map
this
of...
on a T-shirt. Okay. This is not a new merch item.
Yep. We make our own maps. But yeah, I don't think, as Logan said, I don't think they've fully decided where they want to go yet. I don't think they should go straight to the Malleus Key, because that one seems way bigger. I think they do need to maybe gather some allies.
Some assistance?
No.
What? And just as a callback, there is something else that's, like, you know, going to be a present danger at some point. They've also got you in their backstory to, like...
Yep.
Come and they're on a ticking clock with that as well.
Which might be expedited because of what happened. You know,
30 days, wasn't it? They had 30 days to kind of get their shit sorted. Or Fern's parents were going to be destroyed. I think without resolving that, I think Fern's parents might have to go to Nanamori and
probably
chill there for a bit. That's the only protection they'll find. But yeah, that's all they'll have to kill you, which, you know, viable option
sad.
As well.
That'd be sad.
He was
great.
Yeah. But it means more Erika Ishii.
Exactly. And I wonder when they're actually gonna have their next guest character. You know, if they are trying
too.
To get allies.
Yeah, they do
out,
have some allies.
Point.
There's some people they could call in. I don't think the table's not big enough for all these people all at once, but like,
oh, for the crown keepers, you know, like Opal,
yeah, Opal, Dariax, Dorian. Yeah. There's a lot of options.
It's like the, have you seen Spy Kids 3D?
Yeah.
It's like at the end when they're fighting all of the giant things. Junie's like, call in everyone. And it's just a montage of like every character they've met in every movie coming in. Yeah. It's like the original like Avengers Assemble scene where they're calling in everyone. Like the Bell Cells are literally going to have to call in literally every single ally they have. Oh, it's so good.
That's so great. But Concern is also, I'll just put it out there, Concern is the main feeling at the moment, I think, for the Bell Cells and me.
Yeah, and I think that's been, like, their theme. Like, they legit, I don't think, have had a chance to just, like, chill or relax.
They are running on stress and cortisol.
Yeah, that's all they've got going for them right now. It's a bit rough. Was there anything else in this episode they wanted to talk about before we talk a little bit about some Vox Machina stuff?
Look at
my little post-it notes that I have.
Look at your little notes.
Rin caught Javelin.
Javelin.
Coin flip, we kind of talked about that. Yeah, I don't think... And then just the solstice. The solstice is rapidly approaching. I think we're at 9 or 10 days now at the end of last night's episode, so... It's getting a little close. And an encounter with Ludinus is going to be rapidly approaching as well. 11 days. Okay, yeah, they're 11 days.
11 days!
Oh, sorry, because it started at 13 and then 10. Yeah, they're at 11. Not great. Not good.
Not ideal.
The end of the world is coming. And then the faint auroras that Matt described that they saw towards the end. Like, what's that? Oh, man.
Yes, that was so cool. It's coming.
It's coming.
Coronas is coming.
It's almost there. We're almost there.
Finally.
Oh, God. It's very stressful. But if that about wraps it up for episode 47, 48, we can talk a little bit. I'm still not fully caught up on the final three episodes, 10, 11, and 12 of Vox Machina. But there were some nice things I want to talk about for 7, 8, and 9. That's obviously, you know, having the Fey Realm again was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Garmili. Being back, I was so excited when we got some Garmili. That was a lot of fun. And then obviously I actually didn't think they were going to reveal Artagon.
I wonder if it's just because here's what I'm thinking because it is a series, a TV show, they kind of do need to be a little bit more obvious with like with choices. So for when we eventually get the Mighty Nine and Jester's, you know, talking to this companion she has, and we eventually start seeing glimpses of it, you've got to think of the community that haven't watched the show, like the people that are going to be on all the message boards going like, oh I wonder if that's a connection. Like, it's they've got to set that up a little bit more obviously than us having 300 hours of gameplay to kind of to think about before coming to that, because majority of people guessed beforehand that the Traveler was Artagon, was Garmili. But we've also got to remember too, like, Artagon's going to reveal himself later in the show. He comes back towards the end of the campaign, so it might have just made more sense to have him now then have Garmili come back and get Billy Boyd back for a later season. It's just easier to have Matt back in.
Definitely agree. But the trot through the Fey Realm was awesome. Obviously, seeing Sildor again, and we had the title drop, the Grand Mistress or Huntress of the Grey Hunt, or whatever it was.
Imagine that's how Percy does it. Grand Mistress of the Hunter of the Hunt, or whatever.
The Hunts, something like that. She's important, so treat her with that respect. But it was great. Vex's fight with Sondor.
That was really awesome. That was really cool. The visuals of Keyleth being a fire elemental and passing through trees.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
Yep.
Ah, The animation is stepped up from the first season.
It's actually so insane how much cooler the animation is for this season. Like, constantly blown away. But then we had a change in the story again with Grog and their dealings with Craven Edge.
I think it kind of works a little better again for a series rather than for the campaign to have that happen rather than him dying and having to be revived. Yeah. Although it kind of feels like that it still happened in a sense.
Yeah, in
but
a
I
way.
Like this longer journey that Grog had to go on to then find their strength. And it was very much like, you know, a little bit of redemption because we got trying to think of which episodes these happened in. We got more of like Grog's backstory and what led them to Wilhelm and what he kind of did before. Mm-hmm. So it is like a little bit of a redemption that he has to feel so weak and has to kind of earn his strength back.
Which then, you know, goes back to the earlier plot thread with Earthbreaker Groom being like, where does your strength, like, where do you find your strength? And now Grog now has to find that. It's probably going to be great.
Physically find their strength.
They got
to
get that.
It led to some fun moments. We got like, we got the song. We got the country making
Oh my god, we're making our way. That was
making my way.
Where
they say way?
I was so happy. That was so good. I was almost like in like hilarious disbelief. When they were singing, I was like, they really did this. They really did this for us. Oh my god.
Was 7, 8, 9 also the Sphinx battle, or was that before?
That was like 4, 5, 6,
I think.
But that was also really good.
That was also very good.
Really good fight.
Yeah.
I was an emotional wreck at the death of that Sphinx.
It's been really fun. I'm enjoying all the kind of Vax constantly being haunted by the Raven Queen. Not knowing what it means, and I don't like the jump scares. I'm very averse to jump scares and just sudden zombie faces. Don't like it at all.
It gets me every time.
But it's it just makes me sadder because I get so sad thinking about Vax.
I really do like how they're handling giving everyone like their character moments and stuff.
Yeah.
Because again, I don't know if you watched the Q&A that they had for 7, 8, and 9, but they were kind of talking about how it's a challenge to give everyone the character growth that they need. Because, you know, we have hundreds of hours of their character growth in the campaign and stuff, but we only have 12 episodes for them to have that in the show. So I think so far they've been doing a pretty good job of showing these characters, their personalities, their stories and stuff with what they have. Obviously, you know, as fans of the show, I want more. I wish that they could have more development 100%. And stuff, but they're doing well with what they've got. Obviously we also got Kaylee in this episode and Dr. Dr. Dranzel. I'm interested to see how, again, it probably happens in 10, 11, and 12, but I'm interested to see how Kaylee and Scanlan stuff develops for the next couple of episodes. Very excited.
It's really good.
Yeah, no, I figured it was. In campaign one, they met through like that, you know, their song off, their rock, you know, whatever they're doing, where they're, you know, showcasing their strengths and stuff. So wondering if that's kind of how it goes. Moving forward.
It was good. And I like the Herd of Storms. They're really
so cool.
Kind of cool.
Oh man. Brutal.
Kevdak's
great.
Awful.
Terrible, but also a super cool villain this. Directly tied to, you know, Grog and all of his trauma and stuff. And I got chills during that final like shot of the episode of Grog just screaming Kevdak as he walks into walks into town was like, oh,
and he's still so scrawny.
Cool. I know he's still like, scrawny, oh, Grog.
Baby, what still are you doing? Grog.
But yeah. I had a theory, and again, 10, 11, and 12 Ooh. Might shine a light on this.
I will blank face myself.
But so for the Chroma Conclave, they just wanted power and to rule Exandria in the campaign, right? Or was ascension to godhood also among their plans? Because I'm not super familiar with the overall Chroma Conclave arc. So were their motivations also ascension in the campaign?
It's been a while since I've watched it. Yeah. I'm fairly certain Thordak's original motive in the main campaign was just to conquer Exandria, yeah. to rule Tal'Dorei, and then, you know, eventually spread. But and the plan to do that was, you know, they were creating like these offspring of themselves, yeah. Which I still hate in campaign one where they destroy the dragon eggs. I know they had to, but I hate that scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea was, you know, maintain power, take power, control the lands, gotcha. And be worshipped as a god. I don't think they wanted to necessarily yeah. ascend to godhood. They just wanted to be, you know,
right.
The big one in charge.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
because I'm wondering.
And of course, yeah, and of course, as Logan's saying, Ra'Shawn has her own motives of what she wants. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
because I'm wondering, and again, this is with the knowledge that I have not seen 10, 11, and 12, mm-hmm. so things might be different. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering then if they don't do the Vecna stuff and they take Vecna's desire for ascension and just give that to the Conclave and just have the Conclave story kind of extend a bit longer. Or if that's not the case, maybe they don't bring the Briarwoods back to help Vecna. Maybe instead Vecna leave the Briarwoods dead, and Vecna has now reached out to Ripley and Umbrasil, and Umbrasil are now going to be the ones that kind of help ascend Vecna. Or if not Umbrasil, at least maybe Ripley, and that's, you know, why she wants all the vestiges and stuff, aside from her own motives. So I'm wondering what their plan is with the Conclave's goals, and maybe if they're going to tie it into Vecna at all. I'm not sure. Not sure. I don't even know if any of that made sense. You're doing a good job holding your anti-spoiler.
Yeah, it made sense. There. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
But I don't know. But I am super interested at Ripley's involvement with the Conclave.
Yes, that has been an interesting change that I quite yeah. like, because mm-hmm. it always felt a lot like in campaign one, oh, Ripley's back. Like,
yeah,
she's what she's been doing, and she's got two vestiges with her. Wild, like,
yeah.
So I kind of like that she's more consistent and more persistent, I guess. So that's the word I want. Yeah, more persistent within the story of the campaign. Mm-hmm. It's a nice change that I can get behind, and it kind of makes her knowledge of the vestiges more understandable or more realistic, I guess. Because because in campaign one she kind of just turns up and it's like, oh, that's Ripley, and she's got Cabal's Ruin and Whisper, like, what the hell. I like that she's kind of still just existing in the world, adjacent to what almost at Bell's Hells, what Vox Machina are doing.
I'm
out of here, Joseph.
And I love Ripley's story so much, and just Ripley as a villain is just so freaking cool. And you know, I'm still just in love with the voice actress they chose for Ripley. It's just it's perfect. It's for all of their casting decisions for both seasons have just been spot on for every single character. Yeah. And I
definitely
love it. Yeah, Ripley comic coming. Oh,
that's cool.
Very, very excited for all of it. And I will be watching episodes 10, 11, and 12. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it tonight, but maybe later in the week I could do a watch party. But I might just try to watch them on my own at some point. But maybe watch party in the future. Keep your eyes out. Join the Discord. We like to have watch parties there sometimes. So yeah, link in the description. Link is in the Javelin.
Oh, no, this can't be.
Every time they go back, we'll just butcher the name. But that's about everything that I had for 7, 8, 9, again, haven't seen that last three, but am just still loving this season so far. It's phenomenal.
It's it's been excellent. It's
And
gosh,
from,
I don't want to wait for season 3.
I know, but because from what I've heard from everyone is 10, 11, and 12 are bangers, banger episodes.
Very good.
So
they're very, I'm very good.
Very excited. And that it like, and people were obviously saying it directly leads into a season 3 and stuff. I mean, obviously we already knew there was going to be a season 3.
And I'm not going to say what it is, but I kind of forgot that season 1 ended with a, like the cliffhanger of the Chroma Conclave. So I'm watching the end of season 2. I'm like, okay, this feels quite quiet. Like, this is a nice, happy towards ending. And it's like, oh wait, no, there's stuff. There's stuff happening. There's stuff. Uh-huh. So yeah, get ready. It's
I'm excited.
Good.
I'm excited. Yeah. I might have to do it tonight. I don't know how I have time tonight. I have to do it soon.
But right now.
Soon, though. This one, the remainder of the podcast, we will just watch on the stream the episodes. And then we'll get shut down and sued by YouTube and Critical Role. And it'll be great. It'll be good.
It's fun.
But I believe that's everything we wanted to cover, unless there's any last second things that we need to talk about.
I want to shout out again. Who was it? Cyberspace Samurai.
Cyberspace Samurai.
My new hero. I'm not joking when I say that is my favorite theory that I've heard, that Matt was having Liam and Marisha roll for Caleb and Bo. And then someone else in chat, I think it might have been Kata Dice, brought up he normally says, Lordner, roll for this, or Orym, roll for this. He said, Marisha and Liam, roll for this. I am on board, and I'm so excited. So
you've made my week
with those comments, and I'm going to be feral about this.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So Cyberspace Samurai, if you know that theory ends up being true, you will be immortalized as the most massive-brained watcher here, so I'm here for it. So folks, I guess if all that's done and done with, I think we go ahead and call this done. In Gavelin, I think we can go ahead and call this one a wrap. So as always, thank you all so much for joining us. Those who chatted with us live, thanks for coming. Those who are going to be watching this on the uploaded version, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate your support. If you are wanting to support us further, be sure to check out our social medias. Links to those are in the description down below. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, where we post updates on when we're going live, when we have to take the week off, and all that fun stuff. Also, be sure to join our community Discord. Link for that is also in the description down below. Again, we do watch parties and stuff, but it's a good place to meet some new people who are fans of the show, fans of D&D, and fans of all things, nerd media. So be sure to check that out. Of course, don't forget to love each other. Spread the love to everyone you meet, everyone you see. The world needs a little more love in it, so make sure you're spreading that around. But most importantly, don't forget to love yourself. That is the most important thing you can do. So make sure you are drinking water, eating food, getting plenty of rest. I'm proud of you, and thank you for being here. And so, everyone, with that being said, I hope you all have an absolutely wonderful rest of your morning, day, evening, wherever you may be on this glorious earth, and we will see you all very soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.